Okay. So yesterday we had a break because I couldn't get my program to run. Anybody been thinking about what could have happened? So this happened. I forgot where we are. So what did we say about the environment? We run unit tests on our developer machine. What do we need to do for acceptance testing? We need to deploy. Did I deploy my file yesterday? No. So I changed the file, the controller file, and I was testing on the old one all the time. So that's why we didn't see any difference. So I forgot where we are. So we make the changes, we run the unit tests, then we deploy, and we run the acceptance test. And since I didn't do deploy, that's why none of the tests worked. I don't think we can go in too much detail, but let's just look here. So what the test is doing is, we go, just to recapture for yesterday, we want to make sure that when we click on one of the titles, it's get ordered on that title. So if we go to the app as well, let's see, where am I? So if we go to, sorry, here, that page, and then when we just get back to the book list, if you click on title, we want to sort on title, which is not a big deal because it's the same sorting order. If I do author, it changes. If I go title, and we can see that it works nicely. When I click on one, I can't click it again because it's sorted on that column already. I didn't want to implement sorting in reverse order. That would have been an alternative. So what is the test? Being on the page, I click, as an example, the author column. What do I want to see? I would like to see a link on ID. I would like to see a link on title, but I don't want to see a link on author. And I would like to see, when I click author, I would like to see number three on top, number two on top, number one on top. Is that what I see? Yes, 3, 2, 1, when I have author, and ID and title are there. So then the question is, are we okay now? Does it work? Because we had done unit test on the model, we deployed, we remembered to deploy, and then we ran the acceptance test on the application. And then the question is, are we then okay? We may believe so, we may ship it, and then a customer comes and say, "Hey, you know what? I did go here and I did add another book written by some author. I don't have a description of it. And I add this book. Successfully added. But now it's not in the sorted order anymore. Now it's went back to sorting on ID. I used to have it sorted by titles, but now I don't have it anymore. So the application doesn't remember the sorting order because it just picks up whatever order number we chose there and then. So now we need new tests. A test that makes sure that sorting order is preserved if that's what you want. And we assume that once you chose to sort on this, you would like to keep that sorted order even if you add a new book. Then we have a new test case. So we write a test case. Okay, when I'm on the page, I click on author, I click on add new book, I expect to see author not being, so I don't want to be able to see author. I would like to see this. I would like to see author being no link on author, but a link here and there, and the last book I added would be on the top before the other ones. That's what I expect to see. But that was not what I saw. What I saw was going back to sorting on IDs. So I write a test case. Then I need to go to the controller and say, what do I need to do? Well, I need to check to see if order had already been set. How do we do that? How could I take care of the last sorted ordered selected? Yeah. Cookies, and the easiest way to deal with cookies in Sketch is to use the session object. So we just put it on the session object, say, okay, sorted ID. And then what we need to do in the code is to just make sure that whenever we click on something, we put the sorted order in the session object. And whenever we show a page, we go to session object to see what is chosen. And then we use that one. I'm not going to go through to implement it, but this is the way you see how it works. We want a new feature. We make it into the data model. When it works, we want to see if it's fine on the workflow. Then we start defining the cases. We implement the code and we go on until we, as far as we believe, everything is okay. And then the customer calls, say, hey, something new. And then we write a test case. And then we implement the functionality and we test it. And we know that the test case is there in the test suite so we can use it later on. And then, what then if we would like to add description so we can sort of description as well? Then suggestion yesterday was to test the parsing function that parses what we choose, because now the parsing function would not accept description. It would replace a description with an ID. So now it would be good to have that function to see that we can actually choose description, and then we add the functionality for sorting on description as well. That we could do pretty quickly just by accepting description as a sorted order, and then it will be, everything should be fine, except that we need to change the acceptance tests to make sure that we can actually see that there is a link on description. Was that okay? So, sorry, I was kind of missing the point that we need to rerun the unit tests. Or we make the unit test, we make the code, we run it, we deploy, we run the acceptance test, and then we're ready to deploy. So this is the figure I didn't have in mind when I was going through this yesterday. So for today, what do I plan on doing? I was planning on wrapping up. There is one thing that we haven't talked about that we will start talking about. But before that, when it comes to the assignment, there is one open issue on the... It seems that the submission folder isn't available for everyone. So I need to have a look at that. Try to just make sure that you can actually submit. It would be a good thing. I have been a little bit behind in answering. Everybody has asked for an extension. I think I've been coming through gradually. If you don't see anything by the end of today, then send me a new one. But I hope I will be through the all by the end of the day. And then, of course, on Monday in the lab hours, there will be the option of coming to the lab, even if you don't have it on your schedule. If you look at the time schedule for the course, then you will see on the Monday there is between 12 and 2, I believe, there are lab hours, and you can show up even if it's not your class is not put up on the list. I got some input from one in the reference group that there are too many requests and too few teaching assistants, which I'm very sorry for. I wanted to have more, but not many students thought it was good to be a teaching assistant in my course, so I just have too few. So I can't create more TAs. I tried to hire more, so next year hope that some of you will want to help out, and then I have more TAs to choose among. So I can't do much about that. And the other complaint was that there wasn't a fairness in the way we are visiting each one. So whoever is closer gets more attention than whoever is further away. So there was a suggestion on Thursday that we should make a list on the whiteboard, and I said I don't think we need it, but the feedback is that we definitely need it. So the TAs agree on that. So what we'll do from next week is that we'll try to make up. So if you need help, you just write your name on the whiteboard, and then we take from the top to have a little bit of fairness in what order we give you help and assistance. So I hope that is working out for everyone. Let's try and just give us some feedback. If it doesn't work, then we'll try to find something that works for everyone, because it shouldn't be such that some get much more attention than others. It's not our intention, but it's easy that you move from one to the other, and then you kind of stay in a close area, which is not a good thing. So thanks for the feedback, and we'll try to improve on it. And if there's anything else, then just let us know. What I wanted to do is looking at database transactions first, because a transaction is kind of one of the working horses when we develop database applications. What we've done so far is quite simple things. We add one book, we delete one book, we modify one book. In that case, it's fine. We have just one place to update, and it's fine. Now, what if we want to update several places? Then transactions, if you go to the textbook, a transaction is defined as an action or a series of actions that one single user or a program is doing, that could be reading and writing or a combination of it, of the database. That is to be treated as, one logical unit of work. So if you want something that where you, let's say, an example we're going to show later on is, let's say you have a list of books that you're going to import into your database, then you would like to have all books included probably, and not just one of them, or two of them, or three of them. So if you have an operation that you can say, this is a logical unit, I import this list or I didn't import the list, then we can say this is a transaction. It's either done or it's not done. So that's the important thing here. You have two possible outcomes. It's done, and then it's completely done. Or it's not done at all. And then there are no changes. So we can't have something in between. You can't have a partly executed transaction. It's done or it's not. Those are the two states. We're going to come back to it later on when we talk about rollback and database management, both for concurrency control, but also for persistence and dealing with crashes. So, as I was saying, if we have a list of books we like to import, then we would like to know that the list was imported or the list was not imported. And we are most happy to see the whole list imported, but if that doesn't work, we don't want to see a partly list included, so we are okay with saying, okay, we can do it, we need to do it later on. We were happy with that as well. Not as happy, because then the work isn't done. But what we really don't want to see is where the database has a part of the list inserted and not the complete list. So if you look at, I have an example, and I haven't had the chance to put it into the zip file with all the example code yet, so you can't find it there as of now, but it will come there eventually. So if we go to the... So what I have here is I have a transaction demo class. Well, you can look at the controller first. The controller, what's the controller doing? It gets a transaction demo object, and it passes a list of book records. And if I'm able to add the books to the database, then it's okay, and I return how many books I added. And if it somehow crashes, then I say that it failed, so I couldn't add the books. So that is the test case, and you can see here I number them 1 to 9, except for 1, where the title is A Crashing Story. So if I go to the demo class, what is the class doing? Well, it's open the database, as before. I'm using the same test database that, as you know, it comes here in the preference file. And then I add books, insert into book values, and I run a for loop over all the books, because this is just a statement. And for all the books, I bind the value, title, author, description, and I execute. But in this case, I just want to demo what happens if it's interrupted in the middle. In this case, I'm going to throw an exception, which means that in the middle of this operation, we're going to have a crash. So if I run my controller, it says it failed, please try again. Okay, so there was something in my program. So what do I need to do? Well, I need to uncomment this part so it doesn't crash anymore. But before running, let's have a look at the database. So let's do. What happened is that the five first books are added. So after I fix my problem and I run, then 10 books are added to my database. But unfortunately, in my database, I actually have 5 books added twice, because these 5 books were added in the first run, and then I add all the 10 books. So now I have 15 books after importing a list of 10. This is clearly not what we want, because it means that if you have a failure, we need to go to the database and clean up and say, okay, these books weren't supposed to be there. So if I go here, rather, it's easier to delete this way. So if I just go here and say, these shouldn't be here, because these are double entries, and we know that we don't want double entries. 5, and then we delete this. This is what we wanted. Just the 10 books by themselves. So if we go back here, what we want to do is to still have a failure, but this time we don't want it to crash. So how can we do that? Well, we can just say this DB, and let's begin a transaction. Oops. Transaction. What does that mean? It means that the next statements are going to be run as within one transaction, and then we need to remember in the end, after doing this, we need to remember to say, now it's fine, we are done, and that is done with the command commit. So when everything is added, we can say commit. If we do this, it failed. Hopefully now we won't see more than the 10 books. So you see, we don't have the 5 books reinstalled, because either all or none. And just to verify, if I comment out this part again, and we run, 10 books, now we will see them twice, because we did this operation twice. So this time, no breaks, all 10 were inserted. If a transaction fails, it won't insert anything. Question, comment. How do we remove the gap in IDs? We don't. We can't. And we don't care. Because it's under database control. And the database, the idea here is that when a database assigns an ID, you will like an ID to be unique, meaning it will not be reused. Because if an ID can be reused, all of a sudden you can run the risk of having an old reference to an ID that is now meaning something else. So if you give it to the database responsibility of assigning IDs, it should do it by itself. And you shouldn't worry whether it's one or 100 or a million. You shouldn't care. It's a number and it's unique. And it will stay unique forever. That's the purpose of unique IDs. So the only way to reset this is to kind of delete the table. You export the table, delete the table, and reinsert all the rows. Because the auto-increment, it will increment. And it will never look back and say, oh, I have some spare numbers I could use. It will always increase. A question? You probably can. I haven't tested, but what the question is, can't you just call use an SQL statement and set the auto-increment? Because auto-increment value is a number held on this table. And I haven't tested. It might be possible that you can do it. Okay, yeah. So you can do it. So if you want to, you can reset it. So just go to an SQL statement and reset that property of the table. But don't do it, because the whole purpose here is that you will like the database to keep it unique, and the best way is to make sure that no two objects have ever had the same ID. Question? So what you're saying is that if you create something that you weren't supposed to create, and then you realize, then the number is gone. So you would like to reuse it for a real purpose. But again, auto numbers, you don't have to worry. If you worry about the numbers, then you create numbers yourself. And you maintain the numbering scheme. If you leave it to the database, don't worry about the numbers. It's going to be something. And it's going to be useful from whatever the database considers useful. But yeah, there are... If you look at inside the database and look at the table definition, you will find that this is actually part of the metadata, that part of the dictionary, the database dictionary, where it keeps what is the last ID being used, or what's the next one actually to be used. It's there, and you can reset it programmatically, but I don't think you should do that. So... important thing here is begin transaction and commit. Anything in between is one single unit. So the whole setting up the query, running the whole import is one unit. Either it's done or it fails. I haven't included an example. What we can do is we can here... it's not a nice thing to do in our case. So what we can do here is, if we don't want to, we can just leave that. If we don't want to break here, we just want to stop whatever processing, but don't revoke the changes we did. We can do what's called a rollback. So here, if you do a if you do a rollback, that is a command saying to the database, whatever we have done till now, forget about it. Undo everything we did till this point. Go back. This will happen automatically if a crash happens within commit. If we exit this block and we didn't do commit, the database management system will say, hey, I started a transaction, it wasn't completed, we roll it all back. But if you want to give the user a second chance, we are in the middle of something and realize, this wasn't good, then you can roll back and you can restart the work. So it's possible to manually do a rollback or programmatically do a rollback, which means that it brings it back to a previous state. It would have been nice if we had this feature in PHP MyAdmin, but we can't, because in PHP MyAdmin, you have one call and then the database returns the results. So every call will have to be a transaction. So if in one statement deletes everything in the database, then it is deleted and it's committed. So you have to use another tool if you like to have, and it's quite convenient when you work with databases, it's quite convenient to have a tool where you can in the middle say, oh, that didn't make sense, let me roll that back. But in PHP MIM you can't because you have the web in between. So calls to the database cannot be kind of bundled up in a transaction. In our case, we don't need transactions because we only deal with individual books. If you had in a couple of next weeks, you're going to see joins. You're going to join information from several tables. And when you have a system where tables are joined, you may sometimes, when you update something, you may sometimes update several tables in one operation. And that is where transaction comes in. You don't want to update just a few of the tables. You would like to update all the tables being involved in an operation at one time. So then we need transactions. Yes, that is pretty much what we're going to be covering when it comes to database programming, database applications. So I thought we've been through a number of things, it's quite confusing. Everything is quite confusing and new. So what I will do in the end is to try to reflect a little back on what we are doing and what is important. What is the major learning outcome you should have from what we're doing the first 3 weeks here? And the first part is related to databases. Why should we use databases? It's a long time, so I'm going to go quickly through the first ones. But these are kind of reminders that you can have, and you can go back and see why are we all doing this. You can go back and look at the slides, and you can spend more time on the final slides in this set. Easy programming. I'm not sure that you agree with me right now. It's easy programming. Right now we have very trivial records that we deal with, so writing it directly to file might be as easy. But it's easy to program. And the database keeps track of integrity, meaning that we can't easily delete things, insert things that we shouldn't. It's easier to maintain because you have data in one place in the database, shared, not split around many files, many systems. It's more efficient. We can quickly scale up the database management system if you need more power. It's not like when the file is too large, it's going to take too much time to go through the whole file. And we have to log on, so there's security built in. These are just slides that we've already gone through in the first weeks, just pulling out what I think is good. Are DBMSs always suitable, always useful? Or are the cases in which you would not consider? We talked a little bit about it. I mean, if you have typically a small or not too complex data structure, you have a single user application, so there is no multiple users, you don't have different views of the data, and high performance is important. You need really high performance, so you better design your file yourself, and you don't have to worry about many users and many uses, then alternatives could be better. Question? The question is whether this also applies in cases where it is faster to keep a file there on your own computer. And I think the question here is how important will the data be, and how much management do you need? So if you have one app storing data and you have a backup scheme, then there is no need for this necessarily. But sometimes this would give you some other services, like it's easy to query, easy for ad hoc querying, it would be easier to just add in rather than have your own data structure. So it doesn't mean that that you will never use a database management system here, but if this is the case, there are less risks involved in not going the database management system way. So it's mostly, if you store data, typically use database management system. Only if you have something of this type would you likely go for something else. So what are the services provided by the DBMS? You remember any of the, what you call as the services? The first and most important, why do we want a database management system in the first place? We would like to have data. We would like to have efficient access to data, efficient updates, deletes, and retrievals. And if you have a file system, if it, the file is large, it may not be very efficient. We would like to have authorization. We would like to make sure that only those who have access to or should have access to the file can actually access the file. User accessible catalog, which means that you can make tools that can figuring out what is in there and how can we use the data. So if we find a database and we want to use it, we can figure out how it's supposed to be used by just looking at the catalog. We don't have to go to whoever programmed the file structure and ask what is the documentation of the file structure. And utility services. The most ones we've been using now would be dump and restoring or running SQL scripts. So what is Codeception doing between all our tests in the DB module? It runs the populator. What does the populator do? It runs the, a tool, a utility service for running a script. So so those are the kind of nice things that come with the, with databases. And we talked about transaction. Integrity, meaning that if you have a reference to something in the database, it will refer to something that exists. You can't remove something that has been referred to or is referred to from some other places. If we say that all books should have titles, then we say that title is an, not a nullable column. So titles, all books in our database will have titles. These kind of integrities is something that the database can help us to do. Concurrency control, meaning that we have multiple users using the same data at the same time without causing any problems. And the recovery services. After a crash, it could be a disk crash, it could be a just memory failure, or sorry, yeah, memory failure or power failure, then we can rebuild the database. And we'll talk about that towards the end of the course. So that was about database, database management systems. What are the most important parts? Now, if you look at the programming, we can talk about the more the general application programming first, what we've been through. And one thing was the N-tier architecture. Do you remember what the N-tier architecture means? What do you mean about the N-tier? What are the tiers or the layers? So, yeah. So we have a number of layers, and this would be the smallest case where you have the client or the user running a browser, and then you have the web server, which in our case will also be the application server, where the PHP processor is running. That's where we do all the scripting. And we have the database server that is has the DBMS running, and that is overseeing the data. Database data. We have some data here as well, but these are files and scripts and whatever web content we have. And as we've been talking about, we don't need this to do database applications. So in my small transaction demo here and in unit testing, the client is connecting directly to the database server. There is no controller. There is no web server involved. So in the unit testing, and in the example I was just showing you, I was running it directly on in the command window. And then it will just, the client code would just connect directly to the database. That would typically be a client server architecture, if you want to name that architecture. But now we've been playing with client, and the browser sending gets and post messages. And the web server is using PDO to insert data, to update data, to retrieve data, delete data. So that's kind of the environment. There was a question, I had a question earlier today. Are we going to use the architecture, the whole course, or now we're done with the development part? Are we not going to be using MySQL and PHP, MyAdmin, and all of that? we are going to keep using it. So next week, you're going to a couple of weeks, you're going to be looking at the queries, database queries, and then we use PHP MyAdmin and database server. So then the web server, the only reason for having the web server would basically be to run PHP MyAdmin. So you can run some other MySQL interfaces for running queries as well, but we will use PHP MyAdmin. When we get to the XML part, we're going to do XPath, and that's pretty much done on the client, but the page is really going to look at might be from the web server. Then in the final assignment, we're going to see more of these pieces again. So just keep it up. You don't have to uninstall XAMPP or this environment after the assignment here, even though there will be a couple of weeks where we're going to be doing some design, which means mostly writing on paper or writing on a computer. Database programming. This is one of the most important things for you to remember how a program looks like. You remember steps? What do we do? First, we connect to the database. After that, what do? We send a statement. We want to do something. And if it's a prepared statement, we need to bind the values to it. Then what do? We execute. And what do after executing? We may be looking for the results, so we do a fetch. So we go through possibly a for loop to get all the data. Any database programming language or programming will be like this. You connect to the database. You have to pass which database, which user, what type of character encoding, and then you need to pass the SQL statement. We need to bind the parameters. We need to execute, and then we need to get results. So this is whatever programming language, whatever database, this is quite typical for database application programming. Test automation. What are the three steps, if you would like to? First, we set up the environment. We go to a page. Then we click on something, or we interact, or we call something. And then we review the results. So in the unit test, we construct an object, we call a method, and we look at the results. Those are the three steps. And when should we write tests? Before, during, after? As early as possible, I would say. I wouldn't say that you always have to write the tests first, but the earlier you write them, the better it is, because then you can use them. And whenever a bug is detected in your code, it's a good idea to write a test that will detect that bug if it reappears later on. So how much testing do we need? This is kind of a rubber band, because we can't spend all the time just writing tests. We need to write code as well. We should spend some time to make sure that it's not going to break around the next corner. So what we were saying is write more tests for complex code. And for the simple part of the code, you could do with less testing. Because there's no reason for testing functions that just shuffle data. Test the functions that have some logic, that has something that is may fail, something that is critical in the system, which is something you need to train your eye for in the first place. Unit testing, acceptance testing, you remember unit, we call that one class. Acceptance, you try to test the whole system. Why do we use both? Well, some of the advantages with unit tests is that they're easy to write. We have the list of function calls, and we know what for each function, what are the input, what do we expect from the result. They're quick and easy to write. Rather cheap to run, because you have just one class involved. You have the test class, which is small, and you have the class itself, which is typically not too big, and we just test it. It's cheap to run. And when we find a problem, we're typically quite spot on. And we, as programmers, need to test our code anyway. So why not do it in the way where our testing code is also maintained, so it stays there. It's part of a testing suite that's going to be run whenever there is something done to the code. And as we were saying before, having unit tests doesn't mean that we are guaranteed that the system works. That's why we have acceptance tests. We know that the application works as expected. Running through all the acceptance tests, it's what we expect. And then we are able to use acceptance tests even to test functionality that we didn't program ourselves. So we can't do unit tests on the inner buildings of a code that we don't know. We can only do unit tests on our own code. So if you're using a library, then we can't test the library on a unit test easily. So then it's better to have a system test, acceptance test, where we can more systematically test the whole system. Application development environment. We have the developer computer, we have a test database, we have a test server, we have a production server, production database. And the workflow that I forgot about yesterday is we develop and we test the unit test, then we deploy on our test server. And then we can run acceptance testing. And finally, when this passed acceptance test, we think it works as it should be, and we can deploy it on the production server. And it's out in the wild, and the customers can use it. Or shown this way. We have the developer computer, we develop and we do unit testing. When all the unit tests pass, we think it's ready for acceptance testing. The test server is using the test database still, and we test to see that all the end user functionality works. We may be going back and develop something more and deploy it again. But finally, when it's running like it should be, then we deploy it. And the question is, database application testing. And this is really the core of the testing. The rest is general testing. The core in the database course of testing is, what are the two problems that we typically had to deal with when we test applications that involve a database, either at the unit level or at the acceptance test level? Number one is knowing the initial state. We need to be in control of the initial state. We need to know what's in the database when we start our tests. Because we're going to see what happened, we need to be able to know what's there. And that's where the populator and the fixtures come in place. So before every test, as we showed yesterday, for every test, you recreate the database. So every test starts with a fresh database. We know exactly what the state is. And sometimes it's hard to know exactly what was the result. So sometimes we think the easiest way to see that they work properly is to go directly to the database and see what is in the database right now. And that's what we do here to get the number of rows, to get the actual row values. You can go in and see what's in the database directly, not going through our whole big application or through the implementation in our objects. So that's pretty much a wrap-up. Now, a couple of reflections at the very end of this part, because next week we're going to shift gear completely. Dipti is going to come in. We're going to talk about querying and no much programming in a few weeks. But I was showing you this at the very beginning. You have some good, some not so good experiences, let's call it this, during the assignment work. I have tried to guide you through some reflection, but you should also reflect a bit more why things crashed, what you can learn from it, what could be you improve on your side. And whenever you see something that I can improve, definitely tell me, and I'll try to make it easier. And then trying to say, what does this mean in general for me and for the database and the learning? And then try to play out. If you think that you don't really understand, then continue and experiment. And as I said, I gave you the toys, but you have to play with them. And just finally, it can be good to keep in mind that what we train you for is to go out, work in the businesses, work in industry of the 21st century. So if you go to this study here, Assessment and Teaching of 21st Century Skills, you'll find the list of number of what are the skills beyond programming, beyond databases, what are the skills that are important when you are professionals. Number one, self-directed learners. So go beyond just the basic mastery to expand one's own learning. And I'm quite happy to see going in the lab and having you come to my office, and I'm happy to see that quite a few of you really want to get into this and understand and work on this and trying to not just get past, not just get the test to pass, but understand why they work, why they don't work. And that is really go beyond basic mastery, trying to really push and understand this. Manage projects. Set and meet goals, even in the face of obstacles and competing pressure. That's reality. You will have obstacles. You will have pressure. You will have deadlines. You will have other things to do. Being able to deal with that, being able to prioritize, plan, manage work. And I hope that this first assignment hasn't been too much of obstacles and too much of competing pressure. I think you have had your share. And I think, as far as I can see, quite a few have managed that quite well. And I hope that you from this will have some experience in future projects, trying to see what worked for me. How could I make this work in this chaotic environment? And then finally, work independently. So you are able to monitor, define, prioritize, and complete tasks without direct oversight. So please come and see me, but I don't necessarily tell you everything up front. But come and see me and be the one who works. Works independently doesn't mean that you work without support. It means that you are in charge of getting support when you need it. You're not being told up front. You're not being pushed up front. So keep this in mind and take this first 3 weeks of experience. Go back here and think about it. For the rest of this course, for other courses, what did you learn about yourself? What did you learn about us, the teachers involved, that can help you to have a better experience next time? So, see you on Monday if some of you still need assistance with the assignment.